We are what they would call a faith church, but I believe that there's a proper balance in faith. There are people that say, no doctors, your faith, no doctors. I'm not one of those. You got that kind of faith, you stand there. I'll back you in it, but doggone it, your child's dying, I'm going to pick your child up and take him to the doctor. I'm tired of Christians getting a bad name because, well, we didn't believe in doctors. That is stupid. You know, I'll tell you right now, when my dad had his stroke and we was over here, his pastor pointed out something that just I never really thought about. He said, the woman with the issue of blood, she went to doctors for 12 years trying to be healed. 12 years. She'd spent every dime she had to be healed. And they couldn't heal her. But he pointed out something. He said, they kept her alive until that appointed time with Jesus. So if you're one of those, I pray to God you change your thinking about this, because God has never cursed doctors. I mean, there's been many times, you know, well, with Jesse's birth, they told us that the doctor you got, you won't believe. The first child he came, he saved his life. He was dying and he saved his life. And they said, and we just got him from Anchorage. He wasn't there much longer after Jesse was born. He went somewhere else. The doctor my dad had, they said, this doctor is one of the best in this region. No, they, and they're still questioning why they sent him to Toledo. I said, why didn't they send him to Columbus? But they sent him to Toledo. God knew where he had to be. God knew where the doctor was that he had to be. The man that could do something about it. God works with us in our faith. And, you know, through, well, I can't deny it. It was a definite faith-building testing time. Okay? I just told Angela, I said, you know, I mean, I pretty much just drove. Granted, it was in snowstorms and you know, with dealing with all the mental things that were going on. But when I came home, I slept for about 14 hours. And not realizing that when you actually have to, when you're standing in that kind of faith, it takes it out of you. And so we're going to open the Word this morning to Hebrews chapter 11. You should know this by now. Probably won't be a faith message ever taught without going to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. It says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for. Confidence. Faith is the confidence that you feel. That's what faith is. Of things that are hoped for. The evidence of things not seen. Now, when... Yeah. The keys are in the office. When I was going over, when my mom called and told me, said, your dad has had a stroke. Well, you know, a million things go through your mind, doesn't it? And I thought, well, all right. And on the way over to the house, and then on the way heading to my mom's house, I prayed in the spirit, because I got to be honest with you, you can't think straight. You know, this is the first time anything like this has really happened close to us. And I just found it hard to think straight. So if you're ever wondering what praying in tongues is for, it's for these moments. And I began praying, and I prayed. I didn't pray for an hour. I don't think I prayed for 10 minutes. Might have made it 5. But you see, there's one thing that I do have confidence in, is in the power of God, knowing that all it takes is one word. One word from the throne of heaven, and things change. That's it. One word. And on the way over, I prayed, and that was it. I prayed, and I just couldn't pray. Nothing else would come out. So I was done. I turned on the radio and away I went. And I will tell you, folks, there are curves on the other side of Marion on 309 between Big Island and Meeker. There is a speed limit. I wasn't running it. But I'll tell you what, you don't want to be running in a pickup truck, because I was, oh, geez. But anyhow, this whole time, the only time I actually prayed for him in this was that few minutes. And the reason that that took place, and I didn't say a whole lot of words. I didn't speak a whole lot. Even when I was in the room with him, with their pastor, and, you know, with my mom. Mom was doing enough talking for both of us. And she was just going on through all kinds of stuff. And I was, But what I had inside my heart, I got to tell you, folks, is what Hebrews 11:1 is talking about. I had the confidence that what I had prayed on my way over, God was going to do. I had that confidence knowing that this stroke that my father just had, who was later told that it should have killed him, I knew, and this is the only things I would say. We had a lot of people, you know, and they meant well, but for me, the only thing I could say was, he's going to be fine. I did not surround myself with scripture verses. Didn't tape them to my clothes so I could remember them. I wasn't listening to praise and worship music. And I got to tell you something. For me, folks, for me, inside of my heart is a warrior. I ain't bragging on myself. I'm going to tell you right now. You ever get in there, you'll see it. I love peace. But doggone it, if we're going to make war, we're going to make war. And if the devil comes after somebody that I love, I'm not there to be diplomatic. I'm there to locate, close with, and destroy the enemy. That's who I am. That's not ever going to change. And so all I kept saying was, he is going to be fine. Faith is the evidence, the substance of things that I'm hoping for. The evidence of not things not yet seen. My faith only said, he will be fine. Now, we've been taught for years in the faith, they call it the faith movement, that it should not be such a thing. Every church should preach faith. Every church. But they don't. And we teach such goofy things about faith. Well, here's what you need to be declaring. He is healed. Well, yeah, he is healed. But what I'm pointing out, people took that, twisted it all around and said, I'm not sick. That's a lie. Do you understand? You can't conquer a lie or evil with a lie. The devil will not fight himself. You have to conquer it with truth. The truth is the evidence of things not seen. He will be fine. And that is all I said. The whole time he was in there. And I got to tell you, you know, when by the time we got there, they'd already given him the thinner to go after the clot. And when we got there, he could move his left arm, he could move his foot, and he was able to start talking to us. And, you know, my dad, where's my underwear? I want my underwear. He said, give me my underwear. It's all he went on about. There was a point I was about ready to say, Dad, shut up about your underwear. You ain't getting them. Eventually, they took them so he quit getting out of bed. But he was sitting there watching, and he's talking, and, you know, I'm just like, this is what I knew. But here's what you need to understand something, folks. The devil wants to destroy you. He hates you. So while I'm standing there with him, my mom, their pastor, and the people that came with him from their church, the ride over, they left. Dad was talking, kicking around. Within It felt like 5 minutes. It could have been 15. Within about 15 minutes, he went from being able to lift his leg, his arm, and talking to not being able to do anything anymore. He was going backwards. But you know what my faith said? He will be fine. He will be fine. It took them until 11:30. They didn't know what was going on. They didn't know why this was happening. They couldn't give him any more medication. 11:30 at night, they were finally able to get to him. They said, listen, the reason it was 11:30 is they said, the storm is too bad. We can't fly the helicopter. You're going to have to go on the ground. They took him up there. It took 3 hours to go 73 miles. And they got him up there and they ran a scope from his groin all the way up to that artery. And they said, here's why this happened. He's had more clots move in. The doctor said that there was a bunch of issues. Blood veins had, because of a disease, had narrowed and slowed things down. Well, they said, he's clotted again. They said, we are here. We have the scope right there at the clot. I'm going to inject the thinner right there at the spot and break him. The doctor did that. The other doctor he's seeing in town says, I don't know why he even ran that to begin with. But that's why he went there and not to this guy. This guy couldn't understand why he did it. He'd have died or been permanently disabled because, well, I don't know why he did it to begin with. This guy knew why he did it. Guy tells us everything. Listen, we can't put in a stent. He said, I'd love to, but it's in his brain, and the walls are so thin that if we rupture it, he's dead. And I'm like, well, you don't need to kill him on purpose, so let's hold off. And each day, and it was a neat progression, we started seeing a little strength come back. He could raise his arm. He was still having a lot of problems when we left. But by the time we had come back, he was able to talk better, lift his leg better, tried to get out of bed, caused him to get an alarm and for him to keep his underwear so he wouldn't get out of bed. And so much so that by the time we came back that night, they said, we're stepping you down out of ICU and putting you down here. He was talking. And there was a new buck. One I hadn't seen in years. And he got over to the other hospital. He was in physical therapy for one day. One day. He went from having a massive stroke to physical therapy for one day. And Dad said, I was outrunning the nurse that was with me. Walking. He said that nurse was huffing and a puffing. Said, sir, would you slow down? Now, did Dad do this out of his own will? No. No, he didn't want... It came down to a point he wanted to get up. That's what got him around. Because you need to understand something. There was things happening in his head. He was like, there's nothing left for me here on this planet. Which honestly ticked me off. I don't know about you, but I'm like, I'm not worth hanging around for. Mom's not it. Your grandchildren, possible great-grandchildren down the road, we're not worth it. God doesn't need you in heaven. He don't need angels. We don't become angels. We're just taking up space. We were built for here. To rule and reign here. Why everybody wants to go to heaven? Well, it's to be with Jesus. Paul said to be out of my body is to be present with the Lord. Well, good to God. Understand, he's a good God. He's with you now. I have God's presence with me now. If I go down to Morse Road in Columbus, which if you're not familiar with it, is pretty much Arab now. I have God with me. I'm not fearing what the devil may do. Why? I've got the creator of heaven and earth who created this earth and all that we see and can't see out of nothing. That's faith.
And the reason I tell you all this is for us to begin to fully understand. I've never built my faith, and I know some people need to do this. There's different ways, but you may be like me. You don't get it by surrounding yourself with stickers with scriptures on it. I can get hold of one verse, like I said, one word from God changes the game. That's it. One word changes everything. And the only word I stood on, the sick shall recover. That's it. I'm standing on it. Now, there's sometimes people want to go home. And I'm going to tell you right now, if they want to go home, you aren't stopping them. Okay? They do get tired. They may not tell you out loud. They get tired inside our heart. God knows what's in there. Jesus taught us it's not the things that go into man's mouth that defiles him. Because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Food doesn't do that to us. We may be saying, I believe, you know, God's going to heal me and all this stuff, but honestly, we want to go home. There have been several people who wanted, just said, God, let me go. Some of them had just gone peacefully. When Oral Roberts went, they said he was in his room, he started singing old hymns. And I can't remember the one, Kenneth Copeland shared it, which hymn it was, that he was singing when he just closed his eyes. And he went peacefully. He was ready to go home.